Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jason Lewis, and I am your host for the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I want to thank you for joining us today for the show that is shaping the way that the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Before I introduce today's guest, I do want to thank our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by OneCause, the creator of user-friendly fundraising software that helps nonprofits engage donors, raise more money, and save valuable time and resources. OneCause recently surveyed over 1,000 peer-to-peer fundraising participants to understand the key to fundraising success. Their findings are eye-opening. The study uncovers clear best practices for growing your peer-to-peer fundraising campaigns and empowering your fundraisers. Download a copy of the OneCause Social Fundraiser Study today by visiting www.onecause.com/responsive20. That's www.onecause.com/responsive20. Hi, Tina. It's certainly a pleasure to have you back on the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Some of our listeners who've been listening to us for the longest will recall, I think you were in the first, I don't know, three or four episodes that we hosted about 2 years ago, and I'm delighted to have you back for this particular series. Before we get started, would you mind just introducing yourself to our listeners?
Thank you, Jason. I'm glad to be back. It's wonderful, to be a part of this podcast that I love and respect, and I've learned so much from the individuals that you continue to host, every week. I am a frontline fundraiser based at Henry Ford West Bloomfield Hospital. I am a part of the major gift officer team at Henry Ford Health System, and I'm so grateful for the opportunity to chat with you.
Yeah, so that's kind of why I was eager to kind of have you in the mix, Tina, is that you're a frontline fundraiser. So your job description basically says interact regularly with major donors at our healthcare facility. And so everything that's happening right now, both in terms of sort of this healthcare crisis and this sort of economic downturn, and then your job description are particularly relevant. And then also, as you know, Tina, the large majority of our, or at least a large number of our listeners probably have job descriptions very similar to yours. So sort of speaking to them and speaking to me and speaking to the world, what's your sort of high level take on what's going on in the world right now?
Well, I mean, I think all of us are a little bit scared. I think all of us are a little bit nervous. I think like a personal detail I can share is that I'm also 8 months pregnant. So there's also that thinking of, do I, call my boss and say, hey, can I work from home? There is also, a lot of the, conversations that I'm having with donors. I mean, we're texting back and forth. Oh, I don't think it's a good idea to meet. And then we're leveraging FaceTime, which is great. I think donors now, or at least my, our donors here at Henry Ford, more than ever want to be connected to a healthcare organization because, we are a trusted organization. There's a lot of stuff happening in the media. You get to hear, the World Health Organization, declares the corona situation a pandemic. So I think our donors and our employees and our communities relying on trusted institutions like Henry Ford, to get accurate information. So I think at this particular juncture where we are, I think the core value that we really have to focus on is transparency, you know, to be open with donors, to share as much information as possible. And overall, I think the goal should be, how can we take care of our donors with the information that we can share and then with the resources that we can provide?
Yeah, it's interesting that you, so you're probably the third or fourth person on this series that has suggested that very quickly that we have to continue to create community and, you know, steward these relationships, that we can't just sort of stop. And while certainly we can't, we're not expected to go out and have lunch necessarily with them, we do need to use the technology that's right in front of us. Even like the conversation you and I are having is being facilitated by, you know, very modern technology that allows us to have a very meaningful conversation without being in the same room. But I guess my question on that is has that impulse to use something like FaceTime, has that impulse been something that you've cultivated over time, or as a result of the current events, are you just having to get really comfortable with it really quickly?
Well, so before I came to Henry Ford, I worked at the University of Michigan, the College of Literature, Science, and the Arts. So I was an international fundraiser. So I connected with our donors and our alumni abroad. So, I mean, I can't travel to every country of the world, you know, in a given year. I only had 3 to 5 trips a year. So I really leveraged Skype and I really leveraged FaceTime and, you know, iMessages and WhatsApp as part of, you know, that position. And I think when I came to Henry Ford, because a lot of our donors, you know, especially during the winter months, live in Florida and Arizona and warmer places. And then because I wanted to have, you know, meaningful, you know, conversations, even when they were away, you know, FaceTime has been, you know, heavily used. You know, with some donors, they're very comfortable. With some of my donors that are, you know, older, they're very much used to FaceTime because they're FaceTiming with their kids and they often talk to me about it. And I just think because I've created that culture with many of them, I think it's just a natural progression. So at this time, it really becomes very much like you send a text and say, you know, would love to catch up with you sometime this week. Do you have do you have some time for a FaceTime conversation? You know, stewardship is really important to me, and I think it's a really big part of my, you know, NGO identity. So sometimes, you know, like cutesy things that I've done are I send a note to a donor, like put a tea bag, or if I know that they like coffee, like a small, you know, one serving coffee package, and I say I look forward, you know, to a, you know, coffee or a tea conversation. So I think we can be, you know, really creative and really memorable.
Does it? I've gotten to know you pretty well, Tina. I've gotten to know you pretty well, Tina, and I tend to think that one of the challenges we might have with using some of these platforms is the feeling or the necessity that we have to be. Almost like we're putting on the very special, the special events that we just had to cancel. So we feel like everything has to be perfect. Everything has to be really well scripted. But I tend to think that that's kind of the complete opposite of what we have to do. Like you and I here, we're having a completely unscripted conversation. We're just flipping the switch on. Do you think that's particularly important with our donors, is that we just be able to have very natural, unscripted conversations, just like we would at a coffee table?
Well, I mean, I shared earlier that I think a core value, for me, it has always been a core value personally and also professionally. I mean, it's my team's core value. I mean, it's really being transparent. I mean, even when I teach my networking class at the University of Michigan, I, you know, when students like, well, how do I keep in touch with a person? Like, what do I need to do? And I always refer back to treat people like you want to be treated. I mean, treat your donors like they are partners. Treat your donors Not, oh, I need to have a scripted conversation or a scripted experience. Treat them like human beings. It's okay to, you know, it's okay for them to know that you have faults personally. I mean, I think, you know, having read a lot of Brené Brown and following her on LinkedIn, it's okay to be vulnerable. I think it actually helps build trust faster. And then at the end of the day, I mean, donors, you know, want to give money to solve problems. And you know, and this is where we are. We are at that part, you know, of our, like our current situation. It is a major challenge that we need to come together to fix. So it's, I've never done the scripted thing, you know, to be honest. Maybe it's me being a millennial. Maybe it's just the way that, you know, I was quote unquote raised and trained, in fundraising at the University of Michigan. I think having meaningful, genuine relationships, you know, has always been the key to my success. Like, I'm in this work because I want to change my corner of the world. You know, I want to be the change that I want to see in the world, and I want to be able to be, you know, a partner and a connector for my donors, you know, to be the change they want to see in the world.
Yeah, I listened to the way you just answered that question, and I just think that now is more of an opportunity than it is a crisis, I guess you could say, in fundraising, if we're doing the right type of engagement. And again, you're the third or fourth person I've talked to in this series. And I'm just thinking that if our perspective is right, and if we look at this through the right lens, and certainly with like the donors that you're working with, they're going to want to be engaged. There's a trust. There's a level of trust there. Do you really think that like your donors are going to stop giving?
No, I don't think my donors are going to stop giving, because at the end of the day, when you create meaningful relationships that are based on trust, I think, donors really care about their relationship with you and their relationship with the organization. So, you know, they might, you know, have that open and honest conversation and say, hey, you know, my investment portfolio drops X, you know, so I might not be able to give what I would normally give. And I think, you know, those conversations may happen. But I think if a donor is really invested in the organization, they're going to do whatever they can to, you know, help you moving forward. You know, as I was thinking, you know, about our chat today, I also thought a lot about, you know, the world problems that donors might want to solve, that because of this, of the, you know, coronavirus issue, that they otherwise might not have thought about it. So, for example, at my hospital where I work, average age inpatient is 84. So we have a lot of seniors. And given that this, you know, virus disproportionately impacts seniors in terms of fatalities, I think a lot about, like, you know, what do we, you know, need to do in order to, you know, to solve this challenge. So I think a lot about, you know, donors and I might have the conversation of, you know, what problems do we need to solve? So do we need to focus on senior care? You know, and having this these kinds of conversations might also lead us to think differently about other things that tie to senior care, whether it's healthcare focus or wellness focus in terms of the connections in the community. Like loneliness, for example, is a huge issue. You know, access to transportation to go to a medical facility is an issue for some seniors. So I really think that a lot of things and a lot of issues are going to come to the forefront that we never really considered before. Because, I mean, that's really what world challenges are all about. And donors want to solve problems that are important to them through the organizations that they support financially.
Yeah. So I think I'm very interested in your thoughts on this next point, because I think one of the challenges that we as fundraisers might be taking on, I have not asked this question set up this question yet in this series, but how do we ensure, Tina, that, I mean, like, seeing as you're a frontline fundraiser with responsibilities for driving revenue for the hospital, but you're also a pregnant woman who cannot, I mean, you know, where you fit in the grand scheme of things, you can't take it all on, right? So there's a degree of self-care that you have to do in the midst of all this. So how are you thinking about, okay, how am I not going to overwhelm myself and worry myself over things that are really completely beyond my control?
Well, I mean, I go back to the relationships that you have with your donors, like the expectations that you have set from the very beginning. And like I said, I've always been transparent with my donors. My donors know that, you know, I am, you know, pregnant. My colleagues at the hospital, my partners in this work know that I'm pregnant. So I can give you the example of, you know, if I want to schedule meetings with surgeons, those meetings are usually happening at 6:30 or 7 o'clock in the morning before they start their cases. So now that, you know, that they know that I'm pregnant and, you know, all the issues that come with pregnancy, you know, a lot of them will say, you know, Tina, how about we schedule, you know, our conversation when I'm driving home? You know, that way you don't have to wake up at 5 a.m. So, and the same thing goes with donors, you know, where donors will say, I know that, you know, you're pregnant, you've had a hard time, or you've had some complications. You know, instead of meeting at a restaurant, how about I come to you at the hospital? So I think I go back to, you know, the golden rule, treat people like you want to be treated. And I think they will reciprocate. But that's like, that's a long term process. And I think it's really up to the fundraiser to, you know, to build the relationship that way. And just to be fully transparent from the beginning. I do share my, you know, my personal experiences with my donors. You know, I do, like when my 3-year-old daughter does something cute, you know, I might send a text to my donors, because a lot of my donors send texts of their grandkids, or, you know, ask me to meet with some of their grandkids who are in college for mentoring. So, you know, I am a fundraiser, but I'm also part of this community. And, you know, and being a part of a community is not just, this is my job and it's 9 to 5. It's really going to the events and meeting the people and knowing what your purpose is and offering other people an opportunity to, quote unquote, leverage you and what you have to offer. And at the same time, you know, they reciprocate. You know, I've had donors who have, you know, who have sponsored my, you know, Michigan students at their companies for internships, for example. So I think, you know, if we really are connectors and if we are really trying, you know, to do the right thing for our community and for society and for humanity, we should try to leverage all of, you know, someone's, you know, experiences and opportunities to make a difference.
Okay, so you're the type of fundraiser that I just love to engage with and interact with, Tina. Any donor-facing fundraiser is really what excites me, and it's what gets my work done. But there's a lot of people out there, as you well know, that don't do the work that you and I have historically done. Their special event just got canceled, and they're worried about mailing that direct mail piece. And so their whole job description has sort of just been put on pause. A lot of what they have historically done as a quote-unquote fundraiser, they don't feel like that they can get done. So what's your advice to them, those people who are not, they just don't interact with the donors as intimately as, say, you and I would be very comfortable doing? What's your advice to them? Do they need to take Tina's major donor 101 class on the internet real quick and become a major gifts officer? Or what do you think about that?
Well, Well, I mean, I hate to be just to repeat myself, but once again, treat people like you want to be treated. Yeah. Give them the information that, will make them feel really good about their connection with your organization. Yes, lots of events have been canceled. There was a beautiful event happening tonight that it's like my favorite event of the year, where I really wanted to go. And then because of all of this, I'm kind of like, oh, I can't go. And then it was sort of like, hey, this is happening and we're taking extreme precautions, and then it was postponed. But at the end of the day, like, I was so impressed because the head of the organization sent a message and even said the silent auction tables have never looked more beautiful. This organization is committed to solving this particular world problem, and we can't do it without you. We really leverage this opportunity to see you once a year, because we value our relationships. And we are not going to cancel it. We're going to postpone it because our relationship with you matters and we want to be able to celebrate together. And it was just this beautiful thing because it was honest. And I think people really appreciate honesty. I'm sure there is one or two or five people who are going to say, please give me a refund. But in general, I think people are fully understanding what is going on. I think in general, people know that nonprofits still need to survive because they need to do the work that needs to be done, especially a difficult time like, what's happening today. So I think if, annual giving officers or just organizations in general are just transparent with the donors, let them know why their organization still matters and why work still needs to be done, especially in the human services world. I feel if they're, put themselves in the donor's shoes, I think, donors will completely understand. I mean, they're people. I think overall, I guess to summarize, it's okay to be vulnerable. People really respond to that. So it's not about, oh, crap, we cancel our event. It's we're doing the right thing for the community. We want to keep the community safe, but our work still needs to continue, and we need you to make that happen.
Yeah, just one other thought that sort of occurs to me. Do you think 6 months out, we're going to be all the better for this? Do you think the fundraising profession is going to have learned some things that maybe they didn't know, we didn't know collectively that, that tends to be my thought. I try to be more optimistic, in times of crisis. And I tend to think that we're going to learn some important things. What's your thoughts on that?
I think we're still making that shift from transactional to transformational relationships in the fundraising world. I mean, when you think about, what the stats say, people leave every 18 to 24 months, right, for a new job. It's like, how could you possibly build any meaningful relationship, at that time? I mean, it takes, 6-8 months to learn the organization, then you meet somebody, and then you're already planning your escape, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's, at difficult times where you have to be transparent, where you have to think about partnerships with other community organizations, where you have to think differently about how you solve your problems. I think these are the times that will make fundraisers and nonprofit organizations in general just, think differently about how they connect with their stakeholders and primarily donors. I think, once again, being vulnerable builds trust. And when you have trust, you can have, quote unquote, riskier, conversations. But it's those, riskier, difficult conversations that I think help people grow and help organizations grow. So I'm kind of excited about that. And I'm hoping that, this is that episode, in our field that sort of gives us a little bit of a wake up call in terms of really understanding, donors as people and what really empowers people. And I think it's those relationships and working together, to solve big problems. That's what inspires people. I mean, I think when you ask even when you ask fundraisers, like, why'd you get into this work? I'm hoping that the answer is because I want to solve.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals.
These
same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.